Hello, listeners, and thank you for hanging out tonight with me and my friends. Welcome to the show. Do you like to drink water? Of course you do. We all do. And if you don't, you need to be. I want to tell you about one of the coolest water bottles on the market right now, the Zendo Collapsible Water Bottle. One of the things that I have a hard time with when it comes to drinking water, whether it's at work or on the go, is what to do with the bottle. Yeah, you got your favorite old trusty water bottle that maybe your spouse or your mom bought for you for Christmas or your birthday, but this water bottle does something that no other before ever has. It's fully collapsible. Remember crushing a soda can down to a pancake for recycling? This is the same thing, only this container is made of 100% BPA-free food-grade foldable silicone, and it's 100% FDA-approved to ensure no odors and a clean water taste. It's leak-proof, watertight, and easy to clean, and each purchase comes with a collapsible straw. Whether you're climbing a mountain or spending the day in the office, Zendo is the only water bottle that you'll ever need. And you know what's really wild? This is not a paid ad. I picked up one of these, and I think it's so innovative that I wanted to tell you all about it. Head to ZendoOutdoors.com to learn more and pick yours up today. Charlotte Laws. Charlotte, thank you so much for doing this. I appreciate you coming on the show. It really means a lot.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, I know we talked a little bit offline and just via email, but I had first heard your name recently, actually, as on the show Swindled, and it's one of my favorite podcasts. It's a really great show, and they just did a show on revenge porn with Hunter Moore sort of at the center of that show and sort of that story and how you got involved. This was a guy that seemed almost unstoppable until you got involved. So I'm wondering if we can sort of walk backwards a little bit for the people that might not be familiar with the term. Can you sort of educate us all regarding what revenge porn is and maybe talk a little about how you got involved on the activism side in it?
Well, it's basically non-consensual pornography. And so it is nude pictures or nude videos of ordinary people that are uploaded to the internet and along with their identifying information, such as their name and their social media links or where they work, that kind of thing. And it's something, there are subcultures on the internet that enjoy humiliating and harassing women, trying to drive them to suicide is what many of the followers of Hunter Moore were interested in, getting right. them fired from their jobs or, you know, hurting their relationships with their family. So it was, you know, it was pretty horrific. And I got involved because my daughter had taken a topless picture of herself with her cell phone, along with lots of other clothed pictures and bathing suit shots and that kind of thing. And she had no intention of ever showing that picture to anyone, but she sent it through her cell phone to her computer to save all these pictures. And 3 months later, she was hacked. And she was hacked by someone that Hunter Moore had hired to hack photos to look for nudes to then post on his website or send to him to post on the website. And when that picture went up, my daughter was called at her workplace and told one of her friends told her that she was on the site, and she was absolutely freaked out and distraught and didn't know what to do and called me. And that's the first time I'd ever heard of revenge porn. It's true, it's not an accurate term, but that's what the media started calling it, and it just kind of caught on, because it's not always about revenge. It's not always about an ex. It can right. just be, you know, somebody might be trying to make money off of, you know, posting these pictures, or think it's funny, or, you know, it's a hobby, or they're trying to impress their friends. There are a lot of reasons why someone might engage in revenge porn. Anyway, so when my daughter told me about this, I obviously had to figure out a way to get the picture down. And she just was in no shape for that, because she was in tears. She was, you know, when she came home, she just kind of holed up in her room and wouldn't come out, didn't want to be on the internet anymore, didn't want to talk to her friends. I mean, it was really horrible. And, you know, most victims are, they're so severely distraught. About 51% of victims contemplate suicide. And it's, you know, it's a very difficult thing. So it's hard for them to get their own content down. They need someone else to help them do it. And so I started this battle against Hunter Moore which was really difficult. It took some serious perseverance because he just would not remove the picture. And in the midst of, I started investigating him and his website in the midst of all of this. And that's when I learned there was a hacking scheme, which he was denying.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the one who actually told the media there was a hacking scheme, but he was saying, oh, that's not true. I get tons of content. I don't need to hack. And so, but he was doing it. And the reason why is because even though some people would send their nude pictures to him consensually and say, hey, post my picture, that was not interesting to him and his followers. They wanted people they could humiliate and embarrass. They wanted to get people fired from their jobs. They wanted something like that. They didn't just want people who like didn't care about being nude. They could go to a porn site for that.
Right.
So I got involved in this whole thing, and it was, as I said, it was like 2 years of my life.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And like you said, you hadn't heard of anything like this, or you didn't really were familiar with the term until it affected you personally then.
Right. And really, it was at the very beginning of anybody knowing what revenge porn was, because I initially called a bunch of attorneys hoping that they could assist me, and they just had no idea about anything. I mean, the media were blaming the victims. All the victim blaming was happening. The police didn't want to help. My daughter and I went to the Los Angeles Police Department, and the female detective said to my daughter, well, why would you take a picture like this if you didn't want it on the internet? Wow. So that was the kind of thing that she was getting. And then I worked to get the FBI involved. And they didn't initially want to take the case, but they did, thankfully. And I had done a lot of investigation at that point and had a 12-inch thick file. And I had found tons of victims and was helped trying to get everybody's pictures down now, not just my daughter's. And I was able to hand over that file to the FBI. And it took them a very long time, but eventually they did raid Hunter Moore's house and the hacker's house and arrested them both. And they both went to jail, although they are both, well, I know Hunter Moore is out and probably the hacker is out, but I'm not 100% sure.
So you build a case essentially from scratch to fight this. So can you sort of walk me through that process a little bit? Like, what were some of the difficulties in doing that? I mean, aside from the police not really seem like they give a damn at first, I mean, what did you have to do to kind of build that case from ground up essentially?
Well, at the time there were no anti-revenge porn laws in any state. New Jersey had something that could possibly help victims, but no one else had a law. California didn't have anything. So the only thing I had to go on was the hacking. That's the only thing that would even get the law enforcement interested at that time. And so I needed to find out, you know, if people had been hacked besides my daughter. And what happened was, is an acquaintance of my daughter was also on the site, and we contacted her, and she had also been hacked and never sent her picture to anyone except her husband.
Yeah.
And so that's when I realized, there's a hacking scheme. And so I wanted to find out exactly how many pictures had been hacked, what was going on. And so I started reaching out to various people I saw on the site. Most of them were female, but there were a few males. And I had to be extremely careful because I didn't know if one of these people could be the hacker or if it was being monitored. I didn't want to do any email. I didn't want to do anything that was risky. So I had to phone everybody, which is very hard. I had to find phone numbers for people. You'd look at their last name and then you'd like look in social media to see if there was somebody with the same last name. And maybe you're looking for Mary Simpson. And then you find somebody named John Simpson. So you call John, you say, do you know Mary? And please have her call me. And of course you can't tell John what it's about. So I had to do this roundabout way of trying to find these people and then talking to them to find out how they got on the website. And I found out that 40% of the people in my study had been hacked. 12% had been photoshopped. So in other words, it was like morphed porn or deep fakes.
Yeah.
It was like someone's head with somebody else's nude body. And then 36% were potentially revenge porn victims in the angry boyfriend sense, but they weren't sure if maybe their boyfriend had been hacked or their ex-boyfriend. And then the other 12% were self-submits. And coincidentally or bizarrely, one of the people who had self-submitted was the hacker. I actually talked to the hacker. I did not know that until later. The FBI told me, you talked to the hacker. And And luckily, you know, he had said he didn't, when I called this guy, he said, oh, I don't really care about being on the site or whatever. And so I didn't tell him anything, thankfully. So I just kind of said, okay, well, thank you very much, and hung up. And that's why I had to be so careful in talking to these people, because if I had, you know, alerted him of what I was doing, who knows? Because I had more and more trouble as time went by, because Hunter kind of, you know, started kind of coming after me and getting his followers to come after me. So I got computer viruses and death threats. I had a stalker at my house on two separate occasions, you know, sitting outside in a car, probably trying to get into my Wi-Fi or, you know, my internet somehow. Yeah. And so, you know, the whole thing was a bit scary and threw our household into extreme turbulence. My husband was very upset that I was even doing this. He wanted me to stop. My daughter was, you know, in the bedroom and didn't want to come out or talk to anyone. I mean, the whole thing was just a mess.
Wow. Well, so like reflecting back on it now, did you ever have any moments of self-doubt in this, or moments of like, maybe we should just kind of drop this and let this go, as difficult as it got for you and your family?
No, I really didn't. I really felt that it was important. And I, you know, felt that, I mean, to me, I just could really empathize with the victims.
Yeah.
And I just felt it was something that really needed to be handled, and that we needed to, you know, and after all of this with the Hunter Moore situation, I then started working to get laws in place and talking to legislators. And Senator Anthony Cannella in Northern California proposed a law for this state. And so, you know, I did a lot of pushing and trying to help him get that passed, and we eventually did. But it was very much an uphill battle, because the ACLU was fighting us all the way, and they still continue to fight against a federal anti-revenge porn law.
Yeah, and we'll definitely get into that in just a few moments. But I wanted to ask you, like, as you're starting this investigation, did it surprise you when you started uncovering victim after victim after victim as this kind of snowballed for you? Like, did that surprise you how many victims were actually out there?
Well, I knew there were a lot of victims because I'd been monitoring his website. And so, you know, there were just like a lot posted every single day. And it, you know, it said a lot of their information. So you knew what city they lived in. Sometimes you knew where they worked, which made it easier to track them down.
Yeah.
You knew their social media pages. You knew a lot of stuff about them. And so, yeah, and there was just victim after victim after victim. And they just went, you know, month after month after month, there were so many of them. So I knew there were tons of victims. I mean, it was clear that this was a big problem. And it wasn't even just that it was a huge hurdle to try to get photos down, but I was pretty much attacked by everybody for doing this, because, you know, the media were glorifying Hunter Moore. They thought he was great. He was the headline. He was like, cool. He's like the baddest man on the internet. He's the most hated man. He's really cool. And that was the attitude. And so, and one way that I started trying to get our point of view across was Hunter would always publicize the interviews he was doing. So he would write on either Twitter or, you know, on one of his social media pages, he'd say, oh, I'm doing an interview with the Daily Beast tomorrow. So I'd be like, okay. And then I'd call the Daily Beast. I'd say, would you like our perspective? And so that's how we first got our foothold in this issue. But they would give us like one sentence at the bottom of the article, because it was all about Hunter. And then one sentence like, and by the way, the victims don't like this, or, you know, Shala says that, you know, so it was just like, you know, so we were, and I was attacked. I said it was, you know, this was a form of sexual assault. Well, I was, you know, attacked and ridiculed for that. And it was the victim's fault, according to most people. I have this political group I go to, and I told them about this issue. These are all liberals. They should be like protecting women, right? They should care about women. It's like, oh, it's their fault. That would never happen to me. You know, they're just sluts. I mean, that was the attitude of the group. And that was the attitude of practically everybody I talked to. One of the main publishers in New York, very liberal board, right? I was contacted by an editor who said they wanted a book about, you know, my story and about this issue. And she was very excited about it. And she took it to her board, and they said, it's the victim's fault. Nobody wants to read about those women. It's their own problem. It's their own fault. Who cares about them? She couldn't believe that that was the attitude. So that was the attitude from pretty much everybody back then. Now things have changed, thankfully, and people understand that that's not, you know, the way they should look at it.
Were the women, when you were when you were talking to these women and kind of like uncovering all these different victims, were any of the women just surprised that they were on the site? I mean, what was percentage, would you say? Like how many women were surprised?
I would say that at least 50% of them didn't even know they were on the site until I contacted them.
Wow.
So this group of the 100 more people, you know, I mean, I've talked to over 500 victims now. So now people just call me and I don't find them, they find me. But when I was doing my initial study, yeah, I mean, it was amazing all the people, they didn't even know. But of course, I was calling them a lot of times the day after they were put up or 2 days after. It was just right after they'd gone onto the site. So,
yeah.
You know, and they were just, you know, freaked out. And I mean, I remember a teacher from Kansas, I think it was a first grade teacher or a kindergarten teacher, and Hunter was talking about, oh, I'm going to post this teacher, and everybody was going, do it, let's hope she gets fired. And so he eventually posted the picture, and then the followers all sent messages to the school board and the principal and everybody associated with the school that they could find, saying, you've got a whore teaching your children and the nude pictures and this and that. And she didn't know anything about this. I called the school because the name of the school was also mentioned on his website, and I left a message for her to call me. And that morning when she was teaching, the principal had gone into her room and said, please get your things together and go home. And she's like, why? And he just said, get your things together and go home. So she gets her things, she walks out, she walks past the reception desk, they give her my message, she walks into the parking lot, she calls me from her cell phone. That's when she learned that she was on the website. She was absolutely freaked out. So it was, wow. You know, it was really, I just felt like a suicide hotline all the time.
Jeez, that's incredible. I want to talk a bit, I guess, from a practical standpoint, because you're the one that's going to know, because you've done this. I mean, you've worked tirelessly on this, because I don't think most people out there know just how difficult it would be to have a photo that you might have always intended to be private pulled from the internet if it gets leaked. I mean, I was certainly ignorant to it for the most part. I mean, can you talk about what goes into that process? Like, are photos ever fully removable once they make their way online?
Well, you never know for sure if they're removable. I mean, you don't know if they're, even if you get it down, you don't know if it's going to pop up again sometime in the future. So you have to put a Google alert on your name, and you have to monitor the internet probably for the rest of your life. It's kind of like a full-time job in a sense. Wow. And, you know, the websites and the some of the websites like, you know, Facebook and search engines like Google and some of the big companies have gotten better about helping, and they have takedown pages and they will try to assist victims, but they won't always remove the content. It's, you know, some of the big attorneys like Carrie Goldberg, who represents victims, and she's, you know, she does that a lot, and she's in New York. She says she's very upset with the fact that she sometimes just simply cannot get those pictures removed.
Yeah.
So it's hard. We do have laws now in 46 states against revenge porn, plus DC and Guam. We are pushing for federal legislation. We've had two bills that have been proposed, both have failed, and now we have a third one that's in committee, and I'm really hoping we can get something passed. A lot of the laws in the states are not very powerful, not very poignant, including California's. And some of them are even being overturned by higher courts on free speech grounds. Hmm. We've had three states recently that were had their revenge porn laws overturned. So I'm hoping the Supreme Court will even weigh in on this. And I'd like to see revenge porn as an exception to the First Amendment, along with some of the other exceptions like child pornography and obscenity and fighting words and some of the others.
Yeah, it's certainly worthy. With the advent of social media, I mean, as you're talking about this, I'm thinking about, you know, social media and file sharing and this idea that we live sort of two separate lives almost now, like a real one and a digital one. Is it really surprising that more and more of our private images just end up online, just inexplicably? Like
no,
that?
I mean, it's not surprising at all. I mean, a lot of people, we have no privacy anymore.
Yeah.
And you know, and privacy, even though it's not explicitly stated in the Constitution that we have a right to it, the Supreme Court has said we have an implicit right to privacy. And there's certain areas that privacy is expected, like with medical records, social security numbers. And I think revenge porn should be that added to that list. I mean, I think that it should be an area that you know, it just can't happen. Right. And even if it's an elected official, where some scholars will say, oh, well, that's newsworthy. That's something we need to be able to see those pictures of Anthony Weiner or Katie Hill because, you know, they're public officials. I don't agree with that. It's fine to talk about the fact that those exist, but I don't think they should be posted.
Yeah. What role has the advent and really the explosion now, I guess, of social media played in the ease in which private information gets leaked now online? I mean, it's all over now. We live in social media.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people post stuff and then at the same time, you know, different companies are collecting the information and then you have information being hacked all the time. So yeah. it's really, really difficult. I mean, I don't know where this is all going to end up. I do see that, you know, some companies, as I said, are kind of stepping up to the plate and trying to have some kind of restriction. I think Facebook yesterday announced that they are banning deep fakes from their website. I know they have 25 employees who specifically look for revenge porn on their site and remove it. So, you know, there are companies that are trying to step up to the plate, but it's hard because, you know, this, you know, the artificial intelligence or the technology or the information has just exploded so much. It's how do you keep up with it? How do you combat it?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I guess, and that's a good segue to the next question is, you touched on sort of where we stand legally on revenge porn today and some of the laws that have been passed and are getting passed or they're trying to get through. Are you, and I think I know the answer to the question, but are you satisfied with kind of where we stand right now based on where you started with all of this?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm encouraged by it, yes. I mean, we've come a long way since I first started with this. I mean, it's really drastically different. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, obviously people do care about the victims now, but media and politicians and law enforcement is being educated more on how to deal with cybercrime because in the past they've only really been knowledgeable about brick and mortar crime. So this is kind of an area that they never really wanted to get into or didn't know much about. So, you know, now they're more willing, I think, to kind of take these cases and deal with it. We have, you know, nonprofits, Cyber Civil Rights Initiative that has a hotline and has information for victims. There's a Cyber Civil Rights Legal Project with attorneys around the country who will help victims pro bono. So that's a really important resource. And you can do it somebody can do a Google search and find them and contact them. Yeah. So, you know, all of these things did not exist when I started. And so, and, you know, and as I said, the media were glorifying the bad guys, which was just shocking to me, but that's what was happening. And also, you know, you got to remember, this is, you know, so horrific. There are two girls who actually killed themselves over revenge porn. They're probably more than that, but there are two that were very discussed. And one was Audrey Pott, who was in California, and one was Retta Parsons in Canada. Mm. And these two girls had both been raped by multiple people. They'd had, you know, horrible, horrible ordeal. And it was terrible, but they didn't kill themselves over the rapes. And after, you know, over the sexual assaults, it was not until the revenge porn came, you know, started spreading from that incident. That's when they each killed themselves. So if you ask their parents, they will say the revenge porn for them was worse than rape. Wow. So that's how serious it is to victims.
Absolutely. I guess, you know, you touched on it a little earlier, but the general consensus, I mean, I know in the media and everything has changed, but I mean, do you think the general consensus has changed for the good as far as people reporting this, people standing up for the victims, you know, just people that are, I mean, I see a lot of that online when you see, if you look up revenge porn, say like on Twitter right now or something, you see a lot of threads of people actually supporting the victims of revenge porn, people that are out there. How do you feel about that? Do you think that consensus has changed in a positive overall?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, it's definitely changed in a positive way. And I started a program called Tribs Over Trolls, and tribs are tributes. It's like compliments. And so when you see somebody who's either being victimized by revenge porn or even just being bullied on the internet, the goal is to compliment them, to support them, to be on their side against the trolls and the people who are attacking them.
Right.
And I think if people in society would do that and play more of a role in helping victims, it would all be better on the internet.
I know this is an ongoing struggle, and I asked you if you were satisfied earlier, but especially with your daughter's case and kind of how you got involved in this and everything, do you feel a sense of vindication with sort of all you've accomplished? Because you've really personally been responsible. You were the spark that sort of lit the fire for all of this. I mean, looking back on what you've done, and I know you have a lot more to do, but do you feel a sense of vindication?
Well, yeah, I mean, I suppose I do. I mean, I definitely was attacked a lot. So yeah. I suppose, and I was attacked a lot for claiming that Hunter was hacked because nobody believed me for a long time
right. Until
the FBI proved it and until they arrested him. I mean, it was, yeah, I mean, I would say that some of the, you know, the fact that he was arrested and went to jail and his site came down off the internet, and a lot of these really venomous sites have been removed. I mean, some of the worst sites are no longer on the internet anymore. So, yeah, I definitely do feel that, you know, all of us who were fighting for victims have been vindicated from, you know, and even calling it, you know, a sex crime, saying that revenge porn is a sex crime. I mean, that's something that I don't think people would argue with anymore, you know, that it's a form of sexual assault because, you know, that is the mindset now, but that was not when we first started.
So I want to ask you a general question as we sort of wrap up here. You know, I know you probably don't know a whole lot about what I've done in the past, but we just wrapped a historical project on Amelia Earhart. And, you know, it's funny, I'm reading through your biography and I'm preparing for my time with you here tonight. And I see a lot of similarities between you and Amelia. And I feel like Earhart was a woman that didn't really confine herself to one thing. So she didn't have one career. She had many careers. I mean, she did anything she liked or had interest in, she tried it, and, you know, and she was successful. And you've really sort of followed that same path. And one thing I've been wanting to ask you sort of since I reached out to you on Twitter is, what is it like to balance sort of multiple careers and to have success in so many different areas? Because there are a lot of young people out there that might feel that they have to pick a single thing and just sort of roll with that. And you're proof that that doesn't have to be the way it goes. So what is that like for you?
Well, I think you should go after your passions and whatever you're really interested in. I think you should just delve into it. And I do think also that perseverance is the key to success in anything that you do, is you just keep plugging along and you keep trying and the chances become much higher that you're going to succeed. And that's true. I've done a lot of different things, and it's kind of fun to experience different, you know, different jobs, different careers, different, you know, ways of life.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. So, I've kind of enjoyed that, and other people can do the same. Just go after what your passion is, what your heart tells you to do, and don't feel confined by what society tells you to do.
Absolutely. Very well said. Charlotte, can you plug your website, your Twitter, anything you'd like to plug before we wrap up tonight?
My Twitter is @ Charlotte Laws, just like my name. And my newest book is called Undercover Debutante, which is a memoir. And the book that tells about revenge porn that I wrote, which came out a few years ago, is called Rebel in High Heels. And I have a lot of websites, but my main one is charlottelaws.com.
And we will have links to all of those in the show notes tonight. Charlotte, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for taking the time to just chat with me for a little bit tonight. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.
If you made it all the way through our conversation tonight, I want to thank you for hanging out with me and my friends. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Please visit us on social media as we post each new conversation as they air, news, show information, and much more. Go to facebook.com/meandmyfriendspod. On Twitter, you can search the handle @MeMyFriendsPod. And on Instagram, you can find us by searching the handle @MeAndMyFriendsPod. If you enjoyed our conversation tonight, please do me a favor and head to iTunes to rate us and leave us a review. As a brand new podcast, we need all the help we can get, and your time is truly appreciated. Me and My Friends is produced by Vanessa Williamson and edited by me, Chris Williamson. Tonight, the podcast featured the original song Need Nobody by producer Redeman. The opinions on Me and My Friends are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. Chris Evan Films Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. Any audio clips used in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purposes of education and entertainment, and no infringement is ever intended. Me and My Friends is an exclusive trademark of Chris Evan Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. Me and My Friends is a Chris Evan Films production, copyright 2020. All rights reserved. I need.